This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Boy, that Bucs defense. If you're looking for a quarterback to ride a defense in a running game, boy, Tom Brady's your guy. And I'm not really joking about that. He can make the throws you need him to make when the time comes, most of the time. And in the meantime, he can be careful with the ball and not turn it over. And that's what he did against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And Rodgers and the Packers didn't respond. LaFleur didn't seem to adjust as Todd Bowles did. When Rodgers started hot, it's 10-0 as soon as you can blink. And that was it. That's the end of the Green Bay scoring. As soon as those interceptions from Rodgers, those back-to-back interceptions, basically pick sixes. That was the end of the game. They never stopped. Maybe Brady has some psychological whammy on Rodgers. You know, he's aware of the stakes, you know, the legacy kind of games. But the fact of the matter is the Packers don't have a defense to write home about, and the Bucs do. And, like, Rodgers has to be Superman for them to win a game like that. And Brady put up a line, if you look at it, it looks like a Phil Simms in 1985. Bill Parcells would be very pleased. Let me see. Let's look. 170 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, completing like 63% of your passes. That's a good game. Good Phil Simms game from the mid-80s. And by the way, it's not an insult. It's fine. It's just not an elite quarterback. But neither was Rodgers an elite quarterback yesterday. Tried to thread the needle, as he so often does, but this time in windy conditions against a really good defense, maybe the best in the league. Yes, Raj.
Oh, sorry. We call that a game manager. We call that a game manager.
Yes.
That's what that is. A good old game manager.
Game managers. Yeah, it's not a dirty word. That's right. I've been saying Tom Brady's a game manager. But a game manager plus. A game manager who can also come up with big throws when you need it the most. That's good. That's like, it's a good thing to have. It's not an MVP. Like a poor man's Ryan Tannehill. I'm serious. Ryan Tannehill, you know, like, well, it's because of the coaching and the running game. And really? Well, Tom Brady's running back. Ran for 113 yards almost on almost 5 yards a carry yesterday. And his defense played lights out. Ryan Tannehill took over a team that couldn't win with Mariota. Like, look, both Brady and Tannehill take over offenses, right? With the number 1 and 2 picks in the same draft, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, right? They went 1 and 2. And that's who Brady and Tannehill replaced. Tannehill came into a situation where they couldn't win. And they basically haven't stopped winning as soon as he got the ball under center. Brady came into a situation, really good defense, really good offense, good coaching and everything. But Jameis Winston threw 30 interceptions to the tune of 112 points. So you knew if you just brought in a normal quarterback who's not going to turn the ball over that much, instead of 7-9, they're at least 9-7. And then the question is, what kind of premium does Brady give you over just a regular quarterback? That's why I thought the over-under for wins for the Bucs is 9.5, and they're 4-2 right now. They're ahead of that pace by a little bit. Defense is really impressive. And when they get the offensive weapons back, that's what you want. A game manager who's, you know, big on third down when you need him to be. That's what Tom Brady is right now. It's like, you know, in life you come in as a baby and as an old person, very kind of similar, right? Can't control all of your bodily functions. You're, you know, as you go senile, if you get older, you're just overall functions, including the way you think, kind of mirror each other at the beginning and the end. That's like Tom Brady. He came into the league when he was a baby as a strong-armed game manager who wrote a defense and a running game and could be big on third down. He was good, but he wasn't as good as he appeared to be because he was kind of branded with a Belichick style. That what do you really have to do? Get you within field goal distance at the end of the game. That's a great thing to be. It's not bad. Something less than an MVP, though. But Brady, like Russell Wilson, was the running version of that. Russell Wilson could also throw the ball, but what I mean is more mobile than Brady, obviously. But Russell Wilson also was like game manager, could be big on third down, on a good team, could ride his defense to wins, even to Super Bowl wins. But Russell Wilson, like Tom Brady, because they were great coaches and because they have greatness inside, went from game manager, big on third down, associated with winning because on a good team with a good coach and a running game and defense, to actually a great player in his own right, to an offensive juggernaut, to an MVP caliber player who you could build the team around. Brady and Russell Wilson, similar trajectories. And now Brady, towards the end, is more resembles what he was like when he first got to the league. Rodgers has more to overcome on his team. He does not have a defense that's going to carry him. Got a run game. Got some weapons. Although Devontae Adams just getting back is not what he's going to be normally. And you could use someone like elite like Devontae Adams in that receiving core, like, oh, I don't know, Odell Beckham Jr., who needs to get away from Baker Mayfield in the worst kind of way. Four targets, I get it. If they're bracketing Odell, if they're devoting all these defensive resources to Odell, to stop Odell, and he gets four targets, and they're winning, or at least they're scoring a lot of points, I get it. Odell, just shut up and take it, right? That's what you, and by the way, I think he would. I think he'd be good if that's the way they were using him, and it was successful. But if Odell's getting four targets, and you're getting just stomped, that ain't going to cut it. I said last year, the worst thing that could happen for Baker Mayfield is these dudes on this team, a lot of ballers on the team, right? Odell and Jarvis Landry and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. If they start looking sideways at Baker like, this dude ain't a baller, that, you know, that could be the death knell. That's how they're looking at him, obviously, now. How could you not? Just put yourself in their position. And even though Aaron Rodgers really needs some help on the defensive end, if you put Odell Beckham Jr. on the Green Bay Packers, a whole different ballgame. Odell is a complete player. You know, you'd like to think, oh, Odell has a diva personality. He's in, Antonio Brown is a dude who, like, you know, oh, come on. Who could put up with that, right? Talk to Odell's teammates. They like him. By and large, they like him a lot. And he's matured and has always worn his heart on his sleeve. But, like, what do you want a receiver to do? Odell can do it. Odell can do everything you want a receiver to do. He's a football player. You know, a football player. Ben Roethlisberger. I don't know if he's the greatest quarterback ever, but he's a great football player. So is Odell, actually. You put him on Green Bay. Look out. Meantime, the Eagles. Everyone's, like, so into Carson Wentz and how great Carson Wentz did. Carson Wentz is not bad. I'm not saying he's bad, but he's tough as nails, that's for sure. He has tremendous upside, a lot of ability, but he makes one great throw a game. He has three or four other good ones, and then a lot of questionable decisions, turning the ball over in Eagles territory. Eight turnovers in Eagles territory in six games. Well, he puts up all these yards. Yeah, if you're playing from behind, you're going to put up yards because they're going to start airing it out at a certain point. But, and I get it, they had a lot of injuries and all this. If you're getting $120 million, you're supposed to be good enough to make up for that stuff. You have to elevate your team. Carson Wentz, not the reason they're losing. He needs to be the reason they win, though. They're in a pathetically weak division, and they're not in first place in that division. That's not good. He ain't a second-year player on his rookie deal. He's a fifth-year player on an elite quarterback deal who has, however you slice it, regressed badly since his best season in his second year. Keyshawn Johnson joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Key, you've been saying you never thought Baker Mayfield was the best quarterback in the draft. Haven't you been saying that?
Well, it was. You know what, Max? I did originally come out, and I felt that way, and I still feel that way. He was the number one overall pick, but I wouldn't have taken him as the number one overall pick. I like Baker, but what I've always said is, unless he's Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Bledsoe, some of those guys, it's probably Andrew Luck, Cam Newton. Baker Mayfield isn't going to dominate the NFL like those guys did at that position. Mm-hmm. He's more of a don't screw it up, build a team around you, quarterback, and let you be efficient where you can be 10 of 17 for 200 yards, a touchdown on the ground and a touchdown in the air, and we're going to keep it moving. That's who Baker Mayfield was, and that's who Baker Mayfield is. And so when you start to, like I said to you this morning, about Tom Brady. Tom Brady could air it out if I need him to, but I'm not asking him to do that. What happened with the Cleveland Browns is they selected him number one overall because they got caught up in the hype. And they're no longer there because of those things. And if this staff and Kevin Stefanski would have never taken him number one overall over Sam Darnold or Josh Allen or any of these other quarterbacks that was available. I promise you they wouldn't have. But the Cleveland Browns did. And when they did it, they didn't do it with a message of, we're going to allow him to be a guy who is a really good manager, and that's it. If they would have taken him and let him be that, then we wouldn't have any arguments. But they took him thinking he's going to air the ball out 50 times a game. So they didn't really even have a plan how to utilize him when they drafted him.
Yeah, I think what the lesson is to me, like very rarely does it work out that you take a quarterback who just gives you the right feeling, and it's a good enough reason to take him. Like Eli Manning got selected one overall because of the name. Otherwise, he's a top pick, but he may not go one overall. But Eli delivered in two Super Bowls. Normally, that's not the way it works. Normally, if you reach for a guy like Mark Sanchez because he gives you a good feeling, that's a mistake. He needs to be big enough, strong enough, fast enough, have a good enough arm, put up the numbers in college, be accurate enough. Like, in other words, Baker, he had
argue,
the numbers because he was playing in that Lincoln Riley offense. Yeah,
Max, you can't argue with the Jets taking Mark Sanchez because they didn't take Mark Sanchez for him to throw the ball 50 times a game. What they took Mark Sanchez for is exactly what Tannehill is doing in Tennessee. The problem is Mark Sanchez, when they allowed him to throw the football, he turned it over. And so in New York, he became somewhat the joke. But you can't argue with his first several years as a quarterback that he quarterbacked his team to the AFC Championship game, even though most people will say, well, that was the defense. That was the defense. Yes, that was the defense, but he didn't screw it up.
Yeah, but Key, my point is this.
You start screwing it up until later on.
If you need a game manager, it's not a dirty word, but if you need a game manager, probably not with the fifth overall pick. You could find that without shooting the fifth overall pick on it. By the way, you bring up the Jets.
But he was supposed to be able to deliver when they need him to deliver, not just a game manager.
He was, there's a difference.
Be able to
a game
take
manager
shots when we need you to take them.
A game manager who's big on third down. Like Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, early in their careers, those were game managers with great defenses who were big on third down, who developed into great quarterbacks. Not you don't have to develop into a great quarterback, but you need to be able to be big on third down and otherwise limit the mistakes. What do you think of, look, the guy, I was surprised that Baker went one overall, though at the time I thought it was the right pick, because Sam Darnold checked more boxes. Usually GMs are risk averse, and they're like, I don't want to take Baker because he's short, and then if it doesn't work out, they're going to second guess me. So they take Darnold because Darnold didn't have any boxes unchecked. He's mobile, he has an arm, he has leadership qualities, he's tall, you know, like he drank the Kool-Aid in terms of the football talk, like he doesn't have to stop to think about his answer to give you a PC answer. He believes in it and just it comes right out of him. Check, 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 check. What do you think about Sam Darnold right now? A lot of people talking about the Jets probably going to have the worst record in football drafting Trevor Lawrence. Where are you on that?
I don't really like them drafting Trevor Lawrence, and it's not because I don't like Trevor Lawrence. It's because I think they got a quarterback already. They need a new head coach to service so that their quarterback can be serviced and service the Jets and the fan base the right way. A lot of people think they need a quarterback. I don't believe that. I think they need a new head coach and players around them. I'd take that first overall pick, and I'd shop that thing for several number ones and twos and players to be named later. You name it, that's what I would do. I would Dallas Cowboy Herschel Walker that number one overall pick.
But now, wait a minute, Key. You may be right about that. How much of this, Keyshawn Johnson, is SC? You guys at SC, you take care of each other. If it's Mark Sanchez, if it's Sam Darnold, Keyshawn Johnson, boy, you take care of your guys. How much of it is that, Key?
But it's zero. It has zero to do with it. Do you watch football? Do you see what they got? They don't have anything. You expect for this guy to play under a defensive-minded head coach and do well. that in Todd Bowles, which was a disaster, Jeremy Bates was his offensive coordinator. You know where Jeremy Bates were prior to him being the OC in New York? Do you know where he was at?
Where?
He was in the mountains, like literally in the mountains living, like in Wyoming or Montana or something like that, like just chilling in a cabin for like several
getting
years.
Good,
he was out of football.
That good mountain air making him good.
Then you bring him as your offensive coordinator. Then they get rid of Todd Bowles. And then you hire Adam Gase, who got fired in Miami, who ruined Tannehill's career. And Tannehill goes to Vrabel and gets $89 million a year later. Like,
all right,
seriously.
Key, I'm actually, here's the thing. I wouldn't give up on Sam Darnold. I think Sam Darnold has a chance to
you
be good.
You just said Sam Darnold. I'm talking about the Jets. Yeah. And they just said Sam Darnold was a life changer at quarterback. You selected him 3 years ago as the number three overall pick and put nothing around him.
But this is what I'm asking, Key. The reason people would say move on is not because I wouldn't. Okay, let me put it this way. I wouldn't say you move on from Sam Darnold because he's no good. I'm not saying that. I agree with the points you're making. What I'm saying is this, and I'm asking you, when you look at Trevor Lawrence, do you see a different kind of talent, where the kind of talent where it's like whatever our game plan was or our plan was, we need to take this guy because he's just different? Is Trevor Lawrence that kind of player or not?
Not in my opinion, no. Not for me to do it. I'm sorry, not for me to do it. I'd rather move my number one pick and build my team, because Trevor Lawrence is not going to solve all the problems we have. I mentioned this earlier, and I'll mention again. If you have any knowledge about football and the Indianapolis Colts when they drafted and selected Peyton Manning had Marvin Harrison already there. Trevor Lawrence, you draft him, he ain't got nobody to throw to at the Jets. They also had a guy named Marshall Faulk before they got Edgerrin James. Do you see any Marshall Faulks or Edgerrin James in that backfield?
I don't see any Marshall Faulks in the backfield.
They had Terry Glenn on the offensive line. They had Terry Glenn on the offensive line.
Key, I think Marshall Faulk might be on the Jets right now. I have to look at that. I think Marshall Faulk is in the backfield, as a matter of fact. It's funny you mention it.
But what I'm saying is they had some pieces in place in Indianapolis, even though they struggled Peyton's first year. But they had some pieces to build on. The Jets ain't got no pieces.
All right, look, you've convinced me. Keyshawn Johnson, I'm with it. The Jets, even if they pick first, you should not take Trevor Lawrence. Leave that for the Giants, Jets. You don't need Trevor Lawrence. Stay with Sam Darnold.
Trade the pick and build the roster.
Sure, trade the pick. Matter of fact, just keep the pick and draft someone else, because I'd like the Giants
to sever for Trevor.
Man. Trade Dan. Do you think the Giants get a fourth round pick for Daniel Jones, Key?
A fourth-round pick?
Yeah.
Why are you ready to move on from him?
Is Trevor Lawrence is available because the Jets are going to pass on him, according to you.
Man, he's got the same problem Sam Darnold has.
I don't care what his problem is. I've seen enough already. Like, he has some talent. I don't need the fumbles. I don't need to wait 5 years to see if he can be an okay quarterback. I want Trevor Lawrence, Keyshawn Johnson. I want Trevor Lawrence. I want to put him with Saquon Barkley, shore up the offensive line, fire Gettleman, and get this thing moving. You think, is Daniel Jones worth another 3 or 4 years of figuring this out? Yes or no?
I think the guy just got drafted a year ago. Calm down. Pump the brakes.
Can't nowadays. Nowadays, not like it used to be in your day, man. Nowadays, you have 1 or 2 years to figure this out with your quarterback. In fact, year two is supposed to be the developmental year where you really see them take a leap. And if they don't, uh-oh. Can you believe this is how crazy I am, Raj? Keyshawn Johnson comes in here as the voice of reason and patience. He knows a lot about football, brother.
First time for everything, man. The voice of reason for you, you usually fight and argue with him, but you finally agreed with him on something.
I do. I totally agree with Keyshawn Johnson. The Jets should absolutely not draft Trevor Lawrence. And by the way, if Washington is drafting next, they should also pass on Trevor Lawrence. Don't give up so quick on Dwayne Haskins. Pass on Trevor Lawrence.
Patience.
I would highly recommend all the teams not named the New York Football Giants to pass on Trevor Lawrence. He's not that good. The Giants, on the other hand, I think they should take a chance on Trevor Lawrence, Raj. Why not? The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. Coming up, there's an unbeaten team that might not be getting enough respect. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Sometimes I'm talking so fast, I don't know if what I'm speaking is English anymore. The words, say ESPN, 76. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Los Angeles Dodgers and Tampa Bay Rays are making moves. The day before Game 1 of the World Series, ESPN Radio is your home for every pitch of the World Series. Tune in tomorrow for Game 1 of Dodgers-Rays on ESPN Radio.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
I'm going to take some calls, Raj. I'm going to take some calls. What do you think about that? Maybe I'll spend a few minutes talking about how I'll take calls and then not take them. Or should I actually take them? Cliff and Ty and Shorty and Tennessee want to talk to me? I feel like the ice cream man, Eddie Murphy, said he never stopped when he saw the kids, but he always drove that extra block. See how fast I can make these little kids run. Let's call them kids. Run. How long have people been waiting to talk to me, Raj? Their brush with immortality. Cliff in Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Go ahead.
Hey, Max. It seems that there's this narrative that's cropped up concerning Saturday's fight that, some of the cards were wild, arguably even ridiculous, but, you know, the right guy won.
Yep.
But to me, that seems to be some especially dangerous rhetoric when you consider the history of combat sports as a whole, especially boxing, though. And I think underscores... Because I think it's underscoring the need to change the methods they use to adjudicate fight outcomes.
Agreed. I agree with. The right guy did win. If you weren't scoring the fight at the end of the fight, you'd say, okay, Lopez won the fight. But if you were scoring the fight, you could look down and possibly have 6-6. The way I see the likely outcome, it's a quirk of boxing or a flaw in the scoring system, right? It's because a 12-round fight is 12 individual fights you have to score. Kind of absurd, especially since if you win a round by a small margin, it's 1 point for you. And if you win it by a big margin, it's 1 point for you, unless the margin's ridiculous, then sometimes you'll get an extra point. It doesn't make sense, I agree. That said, look for decisive rounds. Once you take away who the A side and the B side is, who's that promoter with, who's the network want, like all that stuff, which is always throughout boxing history, often throughout boxing history, seem to influence decisions. Usually the house fighter has a big advantage on the scorecards. But take all that away. Whoever wins the most rounds decisively usually wins because the other rounds are split up more or less, right? So in last night's fight, in Saturday night's fight, Teofimo won 6 rounds decisively. He won the 1st, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 12th decisively. You cannot give those rounds to Lomachenko. That's 6. Lomachenko won 4 rounds decisively. Lomachenko won the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th decisively. Can't give those rounds to Teo. The 2nd and the 7th were not as decisive. So if you give them both to Lomachenko, it's 6-6. If you give them both to Teo, it's 8-4. My suspicion is most people split them, not intentionally, just because the odds are some people will give one to one, one to the other, and so I'll bet you the most common score is 7-5 Teo. And that's like, if it would have been a majority decision, 8-4, 7-5, 6-6, I'd have been fine. The fact that it was unanimous, I'm fine. The fact that Julie Letterman had it 119, 111, but you know what? Even then, if one fighter's back is to you, because that's why you have three judges on three different sides of the ring. You don't have four, so since it's not even, you won't get as many draws. But you have three different sides of the ring because each judge has a different angle. And I've been at fights live, ringside, where because one fighter's back was to me consistently, I did not have a good view. Go back and watch it on TV. I have a better view. So it's possible one judge in a fight where, like, some of the rounds that one of the guys was winning, I've said Lomachenko won 4 rounds decisively. But if Julie had a bad angle on 3 of those rounds, or maybe she just got in the habit of giving rounds to Teo, then you could see how, or maybe Teo was doing something and she was like, his stuff is coming in with much more authority. But I agree, it was a bad card.
Julie's had a lot of good cards. This one was a bad one. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Cliff just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. And by the way, is a good point. There's a flaw in the way boxing is scored. This is what you have to add. I'm going to give you a real quick lesson on how to judge a fight. This is not the official way. This is just my way, which is the best way. Every round you start, it requires concentration. Start out thinking, who would I rather be in this round? So if Lopez lands two or three jabs, but they're partially deflected or whatever, you go, Lopez is up. I'd rather be Lopez. I'd rather be Lopez. But then Lomachenko lands a big left hand. You go, nope. Even though Lopez was controlling a minute of the round with his jab, but he wasn't really that big left hand for me by Lomachenko carries the round, right? Like the second round, for example. I get that. And it's subjective because you might say two fighters might be fighting. Fighter A is the bigger puncher, you can tell. And he lands a bigger shot on fighter B. Then fighter B landed on fighter A. But fighter B has a better chin. So even though the shot landed with more force, it didn't do as much damage. If you ask yourself, who would you rather be? You'd rather be the fighter with the better chin because maybe the other guy didn't land as hard a punch, but it did more damage. And that's really what we're talking about. Ask yourself every round, who would you rather be? In the majority of the rounds, I'd rather be Teofimo Lopez. The judges agreed, although by a wider margin than they ought to have. And Teo won the fight, and he deserved to win. 12th round, man. A lot of, you know, in a fight like that, when you've won six definitely, or went five definitely, and your opponent has won four definitely, and they're two in the balance, you know the sixth round might, the last round might determine the fight. It didn't, as it turned out. But in the minds of most fight fans, the fight could have been hanging on the 12th round. And Teo's father said, just box, don't worry about it, you got this fight won. That's not Teofimo Lopez. He came out and dominated the 12th round to cleanly win the fight, in my opinion. Got a doubleheader on Monday Night Football. What a doubleheader, too. Plus, Last Take is next. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. What else? I'm doing this by memory now. You got your ESPN app and SiriusXM Channel 80 and on your smart speaker. Reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. The Monday Night Football Preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And what a doubleheader. You know my plan, Raj, for the divisional rivalry games, right? I'm going to fix Thursday Night Football, doubleheaders. Mm-hmm. You have two bye weeks in an 18-week season where you play 16 games. And divisions sit down together. They take their bye together. And then they have doubleheader divisional rivalry nights on Thursday. This is like almost one of those kind of things. Not that it's divisional, but Chiefs-Bills? Boy, it's like as good as a game as you can ask for. And then even Arizona Cowboys, they're not two good teams, but it's interesting, right? Like, that's an interesting matchup. Oh, and you know I'm winning. I'm leading in our DraftKings league, and Raj has who do you have?
Who do you have? I got Hops. D-Hop.
You got Hopkins going. I keep wanting to say Bernard Hopkins. and I got Kyler Murray going. Murray. So even if your guy scores some points, fantasy points, that's because my guy's throwing to him.
Got to watch out for the reverse, Max.
I know. Watch out for the reverse. No sweeps, no messing around. Come on, don't mess around, Kyler. Uh-huh. Just nice, clean game. I'm going to win some money. What do I get? They take 10%. We got six guys in our league throwing in $10. I got 54 big dollars. The rich get richer, Raj.
What you gonna do? I'm going to take that money.
That's a real good matchup. Monday Night Football Preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, home, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Ty in Cincinnati, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, big fan of the show, man.
Thank you, bud.
Just curious on how you felt about Burrow this year, and do you think he'll be an elite quarterback in the future?
I do. Burrow looks good to me. Like, year one, I know, like, you want guys to start right away, and he did. But year two is the development year. And I expect next year to see big improvement in Burrow. And I think, unlike Baker Mayfield, where, I mean, Hugh Jackson had something to do with it, but I think you look at Joe Burrow and you think, yep, glad we drafted that guy. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Ty just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line about Joe Burrow. Wouldn't you agree, Raj? Like, if you were a Bengals fan, wouldn't you be like, yep, we're good. We got a quarterback.
Oh, you can see it. You can see when you got a quarterback early, I'm afraid. I remember seeing Dak Prescott in this first action, a preseason game out here in L.A. against the Rams.
Yeah, I agree. Preseason, right away.
The awareness. And I was like, oh, he's a quarterback. We're good.
Although you can also be fooled by that, Danny Dimes. But I'll tell you what. Joe Burrow, you know who he reminds me of a little bit? I don't mean in style. He just gives me a feeling. He got a little Joe Montana in him. I don't know what it is. He that's the guy I want as my quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I was so jealous as a Giants fan. I mean, Phil Simms was good, but oh man, when you watch Joe Montana, you're like, come on, man, that's the dude. And Dan Marino was better and everything, but somehow, no, you wanted Joe Montana.
Joe cool.
Joe Burrow gives me that sense, like that dude right there is a franchise quarterback. But we'll see. You can get fooled by that stuff too. Of course, he's coming off the greatest season in the history of college football. You know, capped off by the greatest championship game in like any sport ever. It's unbelievable. Move over, Vince Young. Joe Burrow in the championship game. Shorty in Tennessee.
What's going on, Max? First time caller, all time listener.
Thank you, brother. What's up?
I just want to know if they're going to start the freshman in Knoxville this week and take him to Tuscaloosa and let him rip wild and beat number one Alabama. Is that going to happen? And is the red-headed gunslinger Andy Dalton going to resurrect his career this year?
I couldn't understand the things you just said. You have to say it again, but slower, because I don't know if it's because of the radio connection or because you and I have different accents. Whatever it is, I couldn't hear the words. Tell me again, slowly.
Well, I think he's off the air, but he wanted to know if Andy Dalton is going to resurrect his career starting tonight on Monday Night Football, which you can see on ESPN, by the way.
I think so. And the reason, I don't know if it starts tonight. This is a one-win team, right? No, a two-win team right now. They're about to play the NFC East five times. What's he got to do? He's got to play the Giants once and Washington twice. You got to win at least two of those games. And if you split with the Eagles, you're 3-2 against the NFC East. Can you go 2-3 against the rest of the league? You're not playing murderer's row. Got a couple of games in there. I think the Niners was. But like, you're not playing an amazing schedule. Can you go 2-3 against the rest of the league? I think so. I think Dalton can go about 500 the rest of the way and win the NFC East with seven wins. Yeah, I think it's going to help his career for sure. What was the other question, Raj? Oh, that's it? Max Kellerman Show. Janae Angola Jr. coming up next. See you tomorrow. Peace.